acknowledge that I am not physically present in the deposition room and that I will be reporting this deposition remotely. They further acknowledge that in lieu of an oath administered in person, the witness will verbally declare his testimony in this matter is under penalty of perjury. The parties and their counsel consent to this arrangement and waive any objections to this manner of reporting. Please indicate your agreement by stating your name and your agreement on the record.
Julia Williams, I agree.
George Flynn, I agree.
Will the witness kindly present his government-issued identification by holding it up to the camera for verification? Thank you. If you can raise your right hand, please, Mr. Mast. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the discovery deposition of Hans Mast, taken pursuant to all applicable rules and notice in the case of Dahlberg versus the law offices of Thomas Popovich et al. This deposition is being taken for the purposes of discovery. Hans, can you state your name for the record, please?
Hans Mast.
And have you had your deposition taken before?
Yes.
And how many times?
I think two.
And for what purpose?
Long, long time ago, I think there was a malpractice case I was a witness on, and a medical malpractice case that turned into a legal malpractice case, not against me, but against the office I was with.
Okay, so you weren't named in the lawsuit as the defendant.
I might have been named, but I was somebody that appeared on a motion. I think I got out eventually.
Okay. And then you said you think twice. So do you know approximately what year that medical malpractice case that turned into a legal malpractice case? Do you know roughly what year that was?
94 or something.
Okay. And then the second time, what would have that been?
It's not coming to me. It was another legal case. I don't remember the details.
Okay. Are there any other times? More than 10 years? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yes.
We can go over that. I'm going to try not to interrupt you. You're going to try not to interrupt me. You've taken depositions before. I'm sure we can get into that and appreciate you answering orally all of those typical things that apply, and I'll try not to interrupt you too much. Have you ever, other than the one time you've just identified, have you ever been sued other than this suit for legal malpractice?
No.
Okay. And do you recall any other details about that medical malpractice lawsuit that turned into a legal malpractice suit? Do you know what the basis of the suit was?
It was a medical malpractice case that I think lost on a summary judgment motion, and the client was suing the office, and I think I got involved in it because I was on a motion.
Were you the one that drafted the summary judgment motion?
I don't think so. I don't really remember clearly back then, but I don't think I did.
Okay.
I think I might have argued it. I don't remember.
Okay. Have you taken depositions before?
Yes.
Roughly how many depositions do you think you've taken in your legal career?
Lots.
Hundreds?
Probably.
I'm sorry, I forgot to do this, but I think we saw your room, but it's just you and George Flynn in the room with you, correct?
Yes.
And there's no one else in the room, and if there were, you would identify them, correct?
Yes.
And you don't have any devices or anything with you, you're not communicating with anyone during this deposition other than the attorney in the room with you, correct?
And you and who else is on this meeting?
Right. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. Is there anyone that I don't know that you are communicating with that I wouldn't know?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. If you take any notes or otherwise communicate with people during the deposition, we just ask that those notes be produced. Okay. Did you do anything to prepare for the deposition today?
Well, I just saw some exhibits you sent, George. I didn't really prepare them. I looked them over briefly.
Did you review any of the other file that's been produced in this case?
No.
Did you review any notes?
No.
Any other documents?
No.
Did you meet with anyone?
Other than George?
Other than George?
No.
And you did meet with George, I'm assuming. I don't want to know the contents of that meeting, but you met with George to prepare?
Not very long.
Okay. Did you talk to anyone else about today's deposition prior to the deposition today?
No.
Where'd you go to law school?
Kent.
And what year did you graduate?
91.
And were you admitted to practice in Illinois that same year?
Yes.
And are you admitted to practice anywhere else?
No.
Have you ever been reprimanded or disciplined by any court?
No.
Have you ever been publicly reprimanded or disciplined by any oversight body, such as the ARDC?
No.
When did you start practicing?
91.
And where did you start?
In Rockford.
With a firm?
Yeah, Cacciatore.
And how long were you there?
About a year and a half.
And what kind of work did you do there?
Personal injury, plaintiff.
Have you done personal injury your entire career?
No, I did some defense work.
So you were at Cacciatore for a year and a half, and you were doing plaintiff's personal injury work. What'd you do after that?
I went to the Loggins firm in Chicago for about 6 months.
And what'd you do there?
Plaintiffs.
PI again? Personal
yeah.
injury?
Okay. Yes.
And after that?
Judge and James in Park Ridge.
And how long were you there?
7 years, I think.
Do you have plaintiff's personal injury there as well?
No, that was defense.
What kind of defense work?
All kinds. Municipal, tort.
Did you defend personal injury cases while you were there as well?
Yes.
And then after that, where'd you go?
Kemper, I think.
And how long were you with Kemper?
I think a couple of years, maybe a little more than that.
And what kind of work did you do at Kemper?
Defense.
Defense of what type of cases?
Lots of different kinds of auto accidents, premises.
Mostly torts, though, negligence type cases?
Yep.
And then after Kemper?
I think Popovich was next.
And how long were you with the Popovich firm?
About 18 years, I think.
And do you know what year you actually, roughly what year you joined Popovich?
2001, maybe.
And you were there for roughly 18 years, you think?
Yes.
So you left maybe just last year?
In 18.
2018.
Yeah.
And why did you leave Popovich?
To start on my own.
And where are you now?
With Compton Law Group.
I'll give you just a second to come back.
Yeah.
And what types of, I'm sorry, I'm going to go back to the Popovich firm. What kind of cases did you handle at Popovich's firm?
Plaintiffs, personal injury, all kinds.
And then at Compton, what kind of work do you do?
Same thing. Same kind of cases, plaintiffs, personal injury.
So is it fair to say you've been doing plaintiffs' personal injury cases steadily throughout your career?
Yeah, except for the time I was with the defense offices.
Okay. But you were still doing personal injury just on the defense side, not on the plaintiff side?
Right.
Okay. Did you answer discovery in this case? In the malpractice case that were the Dahlberg versus Thomas Popovich case?
I think I did.
Do you remember, did you review discovery in this case, do you recall?
Like I said, I think I answered some and signed off on some. I just don't remember. I haven't seen them recently.
Okay. If you recall, do you remember reviewing the documents that were produced in this case?
I don't know what was produced.
Other
than I assume the file.
Right. Okay. If I represented that the file was produced, would that make sense to you? Can we kind of agree that the file was produced?
Well, if you told me it, then.
Okay. So, when the file was produced, I don't know if you recall, there were some black pages between the files. Do you remember any discussions about that?
I didn't produce anything, so I haven't reviewed what was produced. That wasn't my. I was in a different office when it was produced, I think.
Okay, so Thomas Popovich would have had possession of the file?
Right.
You did not have possession of any documents from the underlying case?
I didn't.
From the Dahlberg versus Gagnon McGuire case?
I didn't.
Okay, so you would not have had access to that file since you were with Thomas Popovich in 2018?
Once I left the firm, I have not had the file.
Okay. In this case, did you produce emails that you possessed, or did you not have access to those either?
I don't know what was produced again by the Popovich firm. I don't know if they had my emails, but I have a new email address. I don't think it's the same back as it was back then.
Okay.
So I didn't produce anything.
So you didn't produce any emails or communications that from the underlying case?
Not that I'm aware of. Unless I produced it to Popovich and he produced it, I don't know how that worked.
Okay. When were you retained by Paul Dahlberg?
I don't recall. I'm assuming there's some paperwork that shows that.
Yep, let me upload a file here. Just give me a second.
I don't think you retained me. I think you retained Tom Popovich's office.
Okay, I've just uploaded a file that's titled Dahlberg Mass Step Exhibit 1. If you can, and George, you should have that as well. And it should be the retainer contract.
Yeah, I see it.
Okay. So it's a contract for legal services, and it's marked POP, P-O-P, 000586 on the bottom, just for reference. So this will be the first exhibit in this deposition. Do you recognize this document?
I recognize what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah. And it's the contract for legal services, and it's undated, it looks like.
That's what it looks like.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to upload another. Uploading Exhibit 2, it's titled Dahlberg Mass Death Exhibit 2, and this should be the original complaint filed in the case of Dahlberg versus Gagman et al., 12 LA 178, filed in McHenry County. Do you see that document?
Yeah, what I'm going off are an email I got with all the exhibits attached, so I'm not, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay.
It says,
okay.
It's a complaint, and it says Exhibit 2.
Right. Okay. So our numbers may be a little off, but the description should be correct. And that complaint shows file stamped May 15, 2012.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Okay. And so Mr. Dahlberg would have hired you hired the Popovich firm sometime prior to that, correct?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
I mean,
do you have any idea?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Do you have any idea about, do you have any idea about what time frame he would have retained you?
I really, again, I don't have an independent recollection of it. I think there's probably a memo out there of me meeting with them, too.
Okay. Actually, I think there is. Okay. Okay, I've just uploaded Dahlberg Mass Death Exhibit Number 3, and the top says, and it's titled Intake Memo, at the top it says memorandum, it's Popovich, so it's POP00961 and 000962. Do you recognize this document?
It looks familiar.
Okay, and it indicates that it's from you, so you would have drafted this document, correct?
I would have dictated it, yeah.
Okay. And it looks like you had a new client meeting with Paul on December 1st of 2011.
That's what it says.
Okay. Does that seem like that time frame would have been roughly correct?
I have no reason not to believe that's accurate.
Okay. So Paul retained you probably sometime in December of 2011, and then you filed a complaint around May 15, 2012?
That's what it appears.
Okay. So, can you just tell me what the case against can you describe the case between Paul Dahlberg and David Gagnon, Carolyn, and William McGuire?
What do you mean, describe it? What it's about?
Yeah, basically, what was it about?
An injury, a chainsaw injury.
Okay. Was there anything about the case that was unique to you?
Other than it was a chainsaw injury.
Okay. What was your theory of that case? What was your theory of liability in the case?
I think the Paul had claimed Dave struck him with the chainsaw.
So was it just a negligence theory, or was it a strict liability, or?
I believe it was negligence, if I recall right.
Negligence against Gagnon, David Gagnon?
Yeah, and I think the McGuires originally were named as well.
And what was the theory as to the McGuires?
I think Paul had said that they were the ones that owned it and looked over the work that was being done.
Okay. So if they owned the chainsaw and were overseeing the work, what's the legal theory for liability on that? Why would they be liable?
Under case law, potentially there's liability for people that oversee and direct the work.
Okay. And is that a strict liability, or is it some other form of liability?
It would be negligence.
So negligent oversight?
Potentially.
Okay. Were there any other theories that you were going to pursue or could be pursued?
Not that I recall.
Okay. So a negligence claim against Gagnon for negligently utilizing the chainsaw, and then a negligence claim against McGuire's for not controlling his use of the chainsaw. Is that accurate?
I don't recall the exact allegations, but I think in a general theme, that was what we were going to try to prove.
Okay. In the intake memo, you want to go back to that. There are some notes on this exhibit that state, it looks to me like it says, Hans, BC, the accident occurred on their premises, their HO, MedPay will cover the bill, and then it's signed. Do you recognize that handwriting?
Yeah, that would be Tom.
Okay. And what does that note mean?
Medical coverage, medical payments coverage.
So the McGuires, when he says there, is he referring to Carolyn and Bill McGuire?
Well, I don't know what he's referring to. I think he circled their names, so that probably indicates what he's referring to.
Okay. Would their insurance cover medical bills in an instance like this?
Possibly.
Okay. Did you reach out to their insurance company about covering any medical bills?
I don't recall if that was applicable, or I don't know. I don't recall that issue.
Okay. Give it a minute and see.
Okay.
And then we'll If we need to come up with solutions, we'll come up with solutions, but...
His phone and my computer got disconnected at the same time, so I think it's the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I can't see you at all. The only thing I have up on my screen is Hans's audio. Okay. George, I can see you. I just can't see Hans yet.
You can't see me?
Yeah. I can't see Hans, and now I've got an echo.
The video isn't working. All right, let's try it again. There we go. You good?
I can't see you yet, Hans. I can still hear you, but I can't see you.
Well, I signed on to some meeting, and I can see myself. I don't see anybody else. Okay, let's try it this way.
Number I have is 779-9076-793.
What's the password?
Thank you, Barb.
Do you have a password?
No, I don't have a password, but when I've called in on the landline, they say if you don't have a password, just stay on the line.
Okay, asking for a, it says, please enter your meeting password.
Yeah.
Oh, and here it is.
Oh, here's a meeting. There's a meeting password 075875.
I might have been using the wrong meeting. There it is. Did this work?
Yeah, I can see you.
All right.
Okay, so we may be on, we're on video and audio separately, but we're just going to go with it, I think.
Okay.
Let's see. Let me see if I can mess with my view here, because now I can barely see anybody. There we go. Okay. Okay, I think we're back on the record. Barbara, you doing all right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, so we just went through the memo that Tom made a note about insurance, and your testimony was that you don't recall whether you made any request to the McGuire's insurance to pay Paul's medical bills. Is that correct?
I don't remember, right.
Okay. Okay, back to the actual claims made. Do you recall what the defense was for first Gagnon and then William and Carolyn McGuire?
What do you mean by defense?
What was their theory of defense in the case, do you recall? If you understood it.
That's a big question. They, like every case, they were denying what we were alleging.
Were they denying the facts? Did they dispute the facts of the case?
Definitely.
Okay. Do you recall what they were alleging as far as the facts that were different from what you were alleging?
I could probably answer that with an hour answer. There's a lot that they were denying. There was a lot that, you know, I mean, I'd have to, I could look at their answer, I could look at their deposition testimony, but I mean, that brings up a lot of issues.
Okay, let me narrow it down a little bit and try to get more to a point that will be useful for our discussion. At some point, you had recommended that Paul settle the case as to the McGuire's. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And what was the reasoning for settling the case as to William and Bill McGuire?
Just risk, like you always discuss with any settlement.
Can you be a little more specific about what type of risk?
Again, that's a long question, but I mean, it's like any settlement. You're taking a risk if you don't settle the case when you have issues that could be problematic.
Okay. When you say issues that can be problematic, and I know it could be a very long answer, but as much as you can you summarize what you think those risks were?
Understanding it's a summary that, I mean, I could probably answer that in a couple hours, but the chance of recovery was, in my view, very slim, if at all, because of lots of reasons. One, because of Paul's testimony, Gagnon's testimony, the McGuire's testimony. The evidence didn't seem to be something that was going to allow us to prove the case against the McGuire's.
Okay. I understand these are very long questions, but it's just in summary, what were you going to need to prove the case against the McGuire's?
Now, again, understanding I would have to put myself in my place where I was back at the time that I fully evaluated this with Paul. But if I'm just trying to come up with some thoughts now, years later, the case law, I think, was against us. The defense was going to file a motion for summary judgment if we didn't work out some sort of settlement that I felt they were going to win. And the testimony from all parties was not helpful to us.
Okay. I'm going to move forward, and then we may come back to this a little bit. Do you recall when the first time was that you talked to Paul about settling the claims with the McGuire's?
No. Whenever they made it, you know, the defense attorney would have reached out to me to ask for some sort of demand, I assume.
Did you make a demand at some point?
I think some of your paperwork shows that I did.
Okay. Okay, I've just uploaded Delberg Mass Exhibit 4, and it says letter resettlement, and that should be still the Exhibit 4 that was emailed around to counsel so that you would have it. And it is labeled POP192 and POP193. Do you recognize those documents? Oh, I'm sorry. Take a break.
Wait, I think the internet, maybe the reason we're having problems is the internet went down. So now my exhibits aren't pulling up. Let me try it again. Do you have that, George?
Yeah, here's a hard copy.
I'll look at the hard copy. So what are you asking?
Great. So it should be the document. It has letterhead on the top, Popovich letterhead on the top. And at the bottom is POP000192 and POP0001-3.
Right.
Do you recognize those documents?
I mean, they look familiar. Documents from the Popovich firm, if that's what you're asking.
Is that your signature?
Yes.
So you would have drafted or caused to be this letter to be drafted and sent?
It appears that way, yeah.
And this is a demand letter where you make a demand of $7,500. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you recall making that demand?
No.
Do you recall if you talked to Paul prior to making the demand?
I'm sure I would have.
Okay. Do you have any memos or notes regarding that conversation with Paul?
I don't personally.
If there were memos and notes, would they be in Thomas Popovich's file?
They should.
Okay. Do you recall any emails about the demand, the $7,500 demand?
I know there were lots of emails. I don't know if this number is identified in those emails, but again, it would have been something I would have talked to him about before making it.
Okay. But at this time, you don't know if there are any memos, notes, or emails memorializing any conversation with Paul prior to sending the October 22, 2013 demand.
Not that I recall.
Okay. And if they did exist, they would be in the possession of Thomas Popovich, correct?
I would think so.
Okay. And if you had those in your possession, you would produce them in discovery, correct?
If I had them.
Okay, I just uploaded Exhibit 5. And this is email dated October 30th, 2013. And it's marked at the bottom POP000195.
Okay.
Okay, and here in this email, Looks like you started this email chain to Paul on October 25th, 2013. Do you see that?
It looks like there's a couple of emails here. There's several pages. You just mean the first page?
I think it should only be, I believe it's only one page, and it looks like...
Oh, these aren't part of it? Just one page?
The document that I have is just one page. Are we...
Okay.
Are we looking at the same thing? It's POP00195 on the bottom.
Yeah, he had a couple other pages on it, but okay.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I didn't. Okay. And on the bottom there of the first sheet, if you have several, I've only published one sheet for the purposes of this deposition. It states Friday, October 25th, 2013. Do you see that?
Where does it say that?
So about halfway down the page, it looks like it says original message from Paul.
Yes. Okay.
To Hans. Okay, so that looks like Paul reached out to you about medical deposition, and then on the top it appears to be your reply of October 30th, 2013. Does that seem like that's accurate?
That's what it shows.
Okay. Okay. And here you sort of... Am I correct in summarizing this as an email where you talk to Paul about liability for Mr. Gagnon?
Looks like I did cover that issue.
Okay. And do you recall at the time what your purpose was behind this email?
I mean, every purpose is just to have open communication. That's always
okay.
The purpose.
Would you have been trying to explain to Paul the liability issues in his case that you described earlier?
Yeah, I definitely was discussing several issues for him so he knows what's going on.
Okay, and this email response is dated October 30th, so that was after you sent that initial letter. Do you recall whether there would have been anything prior to this?
Whether what was prior to this?
Would there have been any communications about liability either to Gagnon or the McGuires prior to the October 30th, 2013 email?
Every time we talked, there were issues about liability. I mean, for whenever he first came to the office, I recall he was lots of questions, and I gave him lots of answers, as was reflected in my emails.
Okay. Did you meet with Paul after you sent that October 22nd demand letter?
Did I meet with him?
Yes, in person.
I'm sure I did.
Do you recall meeting the dates of those meetings?
No, I don't recall the date.
Okay. So I'm going to upload another file here.
Yeah, our internet's down. That's why I can't bring these up.
Okay.
Julia, so, just so you know, I've got hard copies of the majority of the exhibits you sent, with the exception of the larger files like the insurance policy and the debt transcripts.
Okay, okay, great.
I've got portions of the debt transcripts, so I didn't want to waste a lot of paper and ink at home.
Okay, I think we'll be... For the most part, I think we'll be fine, and we'll deal with it if and when we get to that point. Okay, so the document that I'm looking at now is another email on the it's now titled Exhibit 6. I don't think it was titled Exhibit 6 in what I sent to George, but it's an email that. The first date on the email is November 4th, 2013, and the last date on the email is November 5th, 2013 email chain, and at the bottom it's stamped Dolberg001531.
Good, then. What exhibit is it?
I think it might have been 5A to George. It's now exhibit 6 for the purposes of this deposition.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the download then.
I don't think that was included.
What's the bait stamp or what's the stamp?
The bait stamp is Dolberg001531.
I don't recall seeing a 5A on the download. I think it just went from straight from 5 to 6.
Okay, let me see if I can do something now. I'm going to try to share my screen. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. So bear with me. Okay. I can't share the screen. Can I email, George, can you pull up an email if I email it to you?
I should be able to eventually.
Okay, let me see if that'll...
All right, let me run to the washroom real quick while you guys...
Let's take a quick break. Right. That's fine. We'll try to work this out. If anybody else needs a break, obviously, take a break now. Zoom enough to be familiar with the share screen feature, so sharing my it seems like it's gonna, if I try to do that, one, it doesn't look like you're actually gonna get, oh, maybe you will. Can you see?
I got your email, and it's on my phone. But I think the computer is using so much of my Wi-Fi through the hotspot that it's running real slow. So I'm going to send it to Hans and see if he can print it. Okay. I just emailed it to you. Would you be able to print it, or did you not have to print it?
On which email?
Your copy law.
I don't have internet.
No, okay.
For some reason, let me see if it came back. And it comes and goes, and right now it looks like it's gone. Yeah.
Okay, and I'll see if I can pull it up here, but it's just running real slow.
Can you see my screen at all? A document?
Right now I don't.
Okay. It says I'm screen sharing, but that doesn't mean I'm actually screen sharing.
I can see it.
I see what looks like an email chain now on my screen.
Okay.
Well, let me see if I can expand this, because it's like really small right now.
Yeah, the internet went down for some reason.
Okay.
Phone, and then it went down.
Okay.
Holy moly. So that is?
Can you see it?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's marked at the bottom, and it may be tiny, tiny, and I apologize, but it's Dolberg001531.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's an email chain, it looks like, between you and Paul Dolberg.
Counselor, are we back on the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back on the record and I'll start again. Yeah, that seems important. Okay. Okay, back on the record. This is Exhibit 6 for the deposition, and it's marked at the bottom, Dolberg 001531. And it's an email chain between Paul Dolberg and Hans Mast dated November 4th through about November 5th. Is that accurate, Hans?
That's what it appears.
Okay. And it appears at the bottom that Paul is asking you if he should bring anything to a meeting.
Okay.
And that meeting appears to be at 3 p.m. on November 4th of 2013.
Okay.
Is that an accurate description? Okay. Do you recall having a meeting on November 4th of 2013 with Paul Dolberg?
I don't have an independent recollection.
Okay.
Julie, now I recall this was a separate exhibit you sent a little bit later than the original download, so I did have this.
Okay. Well, we got it worked out.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. You don't recall calling a meeting for November 4th?
We had lots of meetings, so
okay.
I don't have an independent recollection of that one particular date.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to stop screen sharing. Okay. I'm going to upload another file. This is Deposition Exhibit 7. George, you probably had it as Exhibit 6, but for the purposes of this deposition right now, it's going to be 7, and it's an email chain.
I have these on the computer. You don't need, unless you want to, but I'm just saying I have these on the computer.
Okay, but Barb needs them, so that's why I keep uploading them, because otherwise she doesn't have them. Okay, so Exhibit 7, and it's POP00181 and POP00182, and it's 2 pages of an email chain. November 15th, looks like on the second page it starts November 15th and ends November 19th. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay, great. So, here, it looks like Paul started this email chain, but then on November 18th, you note that the McGuire's attorney has offered us you $5,000 in full settlement of the claim against the McGuire's only. Do you see that?
Yes.
Do you recall that offer being made?
I do have some recollection of having a conversation with him.
Okay. So, I'm going to upload another document and then we can keep going here. And then, this is Exhibit 8, and it is a letter from Ronald Bartsch to you, Hans, and it's POP000667. Do you have that?
What's it dated?
Oh, I'm sorry, dated November 18,
2013. Yeah, I have that.
Okay. And that's a settlement letter from Bartsch offering the settlement of $5,000, correct?
Right.
Do you recall receiving this letter?
I don't today recall getting the letter, but I'm familiar with the transaction, yes.
Okay. So you would have received the $5,000 offer from Bartsch, and you communicated it to Paul via the email on November 18th.
As well as when we talked, yes.
Okay. And when did you talk?
Again, I don't know the date. I just know generally how this all transpired.
Okay. Would you have talked to Paul on the 18th when the letter came in?
Well, it's dated the 18th. I doubt I got it on the 18th. Whenever I got it, I would have told Paul.
Okay. And it looks like the email you sent, which is Exhibit 7, communicated that offer.
Okay.
Would you have talked to the McGuire's attorney prior to receiving the letter about the offer?
I don't recall. It might have. That might have happened.
Do you recall whether you met with Paul sometime after, on or after November 18 to discuss the settlement offer?
I'm sure we did. I know we had several conversations and meetings about that.
Okay. Okay. In this email chain, this Exhibit 7, about halfway down the page, it says, on November 18, 2013 at 7:40 p.m., I'll respond to your email. Can you see that?
Wait, are we going back to the email now?
Yep. POP, it's POP00181.
What exhibit?
Exhibit 7.
It's 7? That's the letter.
It may be 6 for you. It may be
okay.
6 for you.
Alright, let's take a look. What date is the email?
The date at the top of the email chain is Tuesday, November 19, 2013.
Yeah, I have that.
Okay. And then about maybe halfway down the page, it's dated on November 18, 2013 at 7:40 p.m. Do you see that?
Yep.
And there it says, only 5, that's not much at all. Do you see that?
That's his response, yes.
Right, right. Do you recall talking to Paul about the $5,000 and that not being much?
Like I said, yes, we've had plenty of conversations and meetings on that.
Okay. When you originally offered the $7,500, did you talk about what the possible outcomes as far as counteroffers, what they may demand, something like that? Did you talk about that prior to making that $7,500 offer?
I mean, I think I generally understand what you're asking. Did we just have general conversations of numbers? Yes.
Okay. In this email, I understand this is speculation, but in this email, it appears that Paul's surprised that it's $5,000 was the offer, correct? Would that be fair to characterize it that way?
Is he surprised at it, or is he surprised at the amount? It looks like he didn't think it was much.
Right. So, if you originally offered $7,500 and they came back at $5,000, In your experience, does that seem like much of a difference when it comes to counteroffers?
I'm not real sure what you mean by that.
Let me rephrase, because I don't think I'm getting to the point. Prior to making the $7,500 offer, did you discuss with Paul that the McGuire's may come back with an offer that was lower than the $7,500?
I understand the question. I'm not trying to play games, but you're asking me, do I recall specific words that are used for topics? All I can tell you about this is we talked about the whole gamut of options, that I didn't feel it was a strong case, that they were reaching out to us for $5,000, and that balancing everything, the risks, costs, even though it wasn't much, it was something that would have been desirable for him if he wants to end up with money versus the McGuires.
Okay. I'm going to add another exhibit here. Okay, for the purposes of this deposition, it's exhibit, not deposition exhibit 9. This is a memorandum, so at the top it'll say memorandum, and the date is November 20th, 2013, and at the bottom it's identified as COP, and then 3. There's 000003, I believe. Do you have that?
What exhibit is it?
I think you're probably going to have it as an Exhibit 8, but for the purposes of this deposition, it's actually going to be Exhibit 9.
Okay.
And it's Delbert Mass Memo 2013, November 20th.
Okay, yep.
Okay. So it looks from this memo that you had a meeting with Paul and his friend on November 20th. Does that accurately reflect this, what's stated in the memo?
Yes.
Do you remember this document? Do you recall this?
Like I said before, I understand what you're asking, but we've had lots of meetings. Do I remember that particular date? No, but I remember the meetings.
Do you recognize this memorandum?
I recognize the discussion that's referenced in the memo. I haven't seen the memo for 7 years.
Okay. Do you recall the advice that you gave in that meeting of November 20th?
Yeah, like I said, it's summarized a little bit in there, yeah.
Okay. And what was the, what was the advice that you gave?
You want me to read the memo, or you want me to just tell you generally what the topics were, or what?
Generally, to the best that you can recall.
Looks like on that day he brought his friend in because before he wanted to consider the offer, he wanted to have his friend come with him to talk about these issues with me. So
okay.
We went all over.
All
right, go ahead.
No, I'll let you finish. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we went over all the issues, all the risks, all the money issues, all of the issues.
Do you recall who the friend was?
Not as I sit here today.
And from this memo, it says Paul maintains that McGuire controlled everything that Dave was doing, and you told him that wasn't what the evidence seemed to show. So can you expound on what, this is a really, it's going to be a complicated question, but to the best of your ability, can you explain what the theory of your case was against the McGuires and what the evidence was that was going to, what evidence was your reason for believing that you couldn't prove your theory?
We already talked a little bit about that earlier, but every time we met, we talked about this because this was a subject at the time with the McGuires, and given the testimony of the McGuires, given Paul's testimony, given the lack of any evidence that they were controlling any work or even knew what Paul was doing, I felt it was a big, high risk of moving forward on that claim.
So I'm going to try to summarize this, maybe in parts. So in order for the McGuires to be liable for Gagnon's work, Paul would have to prove in his case that the McGuires controlled Gagnon's work. Is that accurate?
Are you asking me if that's an accurate statement of the law?
Yes.
I think that's partially right. There's a lot more to it. There's different branches and elements that you have to prove. Control is a factual matter, and you'd have to be able to establish there was some oversight I mean, it goes down into some factual issues that you have to be able to show.
Okay. So can you, to the best of your ability, can you kind of walk me through, for the negligence claim against the McGuire, what the legal elements were that you would have to show?
I haven't brushed up recently on that area, but I can tell you that under the case law, they have to have some oversight and control over what was going on and some involvement in the work and some knowledge higher and above what Paul was doing. And if you look at their testimony, they were not out there, they were not looking at it, they didn't even really know what Paul was doing, frankly.
And what about David? Did they have to control what David was doing as well?
I meant David, I'm sorry.
Okay. So the McGuires would have to have oversight and control over David Gagnon.
Over the work.
Okay. Over the work. Okay. So William and Carolyn did buy the chainsaw, correct?
I believe that is true.
Okay. But then David Gagnon was the one operating the chainsaw.
Right.
And you would have to show, in Paul's case, that Bill and Carolyn, one or the other, had control over David's operation of the chainsaw.
I mean, control could mean a lot of things. They would have to be in a position to instruct him, tell him what to do, be aware of the work that was being done, and have some control over what he was doing.
Okay, so in your opinion of the case was that it was insufficient for them to have simply purchased the chainsaw and provided it to Gagnon. And what about if they were paying him? Would that make any difference?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't know or no?
No.
Sorry, just bear with me for a second here. Informed Paul, I'm sorry, let me back up. In deposition exhibit 7, so it's probably 6 for you, the email chain between you and Paul, roughly November 18th through the 19th, Popovich 000181. On the bottom of that first page, November 18, 2013 at 1:28 p.m., there's an email from you. Do you see that?
Yes.
In addition, the McGuire attorney, it's ATTY, has offered us you $5,000 in full settlement of the claim against the McGuires. Only, as we discussed, they have no liability in the case for what Dave did as property owners, so they likely will get out of the case on a motion. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. So this is where you told Paul that you didn't believe the McGuires had any liabilities for the reasons In part for the reasons we just discussed.
Right.
defendants made the original offer around November 18, 2013, and Paul accepted it around December 20th, 2013. Is that statement accurate?
I don't have, like I said, independent recollection of the date. I would just have to go off the documents.
Okay. Was there, if that time frame is roughly correct, was there anything that occurred during that time frame that indicated to you, you know, why Paul changed his mind from originally thinking it was too little to now accepting it? Was there anything that stuck out in your mind about that?
Yeah.
Can you expound on that?
Well, he had his friend with him during our meeting, and he reviewed the depositions.
Okay. Did he not have the depositions prior to that?
I remember he asked for copies of them, so I provided them to him.
Okay. And when you say the depositions, do you mean just the party depositions, the McGuire's and the Gagnon?
I don't remember if I gave him the doctors. I don't remember which ones I gave him, but I know specifically it was Gagnon and the McGuire's.
Quoting Delberg Mass Dep Exhibit 12. This is titled Legal Research. And this is hard because it's 27 pages. Some of them have base numbers, but some of them are black on the bottom, so I think the base numbers didn't take, but it's roughly looks like, let's see, roughly 204, maybe 205, Delberg 204, 205 through 00304. Actually, I'm sorry, these aren't going to be continuous. Do you have that packet of legal research in front of you? It appears to be copies out of copies of case law out of the Northeastern Digest.
I just have the one case here.
Just one case? What's the case title?
The first one. It's LAJATO.
Okay. Did you copy this case law?
I don't know.
Do you recall providing any case law to Paul?
I don't know if I did or didn't. I don't know if he asked.
Okay. Do you recall doing case law research?
I'm sure I did, yeah.
Would have there been a memo or something regarding that research?
Not necessarily. I was familiar with the law.
Okay. Okay. Was there any case law that stuck out to you? Any particular cases that stuck out to you?
Check to the form.
You mean what stuck out to me with regard to Paul in his case?
No, were there any applicable cases that stuck out to you one way or the other as to whether the McGuire's would be liable? Was there any specific cases that made you think that the McGuire's may not be liable given the facts in Paul's case?
You deal with this issue a lot. And I can't think of one particular name of a case, but these cases all go along the same line. So there were lots of cases on this one particular issue. It wasn't a complicated issue.
So it's particularly the issue of control of Gagnon.
Of a premises owner's liability for an independent contractor.
Okay. So can you explain generally what an independent contractor is?
And I'll give you an answer if you want, but just, I mean, we're talking now, what is it, 7 years later? I haven't been asked to do any research before today's deposition, but, so, I mean, if you're asking me for what the case law says, I'd have to look at the case law.
I'm asking based on your experience and knowledge as a personal injury attorney, and not necessarily related to Dahlberg's case specifically,
okay. But
based on your knowledge and experience in premises liability cases, what is an independent contractor?
Someone that works on their own.
And can you explain what you mean by on their own?
Somebody that's hired, like somebody that's hired to paint a house.
Okay. So somebody that's hired by a homeowner, or maybe
yes.
A business, but someone that's hired by a homeowner, but the homeowner doesn't tell them how to do their job.
Right.
Did you ever obtain a copy of the McGuire's insurance policy, do you recall?
I don't have an independent recollection.
Did you ever advise Paul as to the limits of the McGuire's policy?
I'm sure we talked about it.
Uploaded Dahlberg Mass Deposition Exhibit 13, McGuire Interrogatory Answers, and their date stamped Dahlberg 000162 is the first page, and there's roughly 14 pages. Do you see that document?
Yes.
Okay. So
this is 14?
This should be Exhibit 13.
13
or 14? I think I have it as 13. Yes, okay. And this, I'm looking at paragraph 15. At least I'm trying to look at paragraph 15. Okay, in paragraph 15, it looks like there was a question about the homeowner's insurance, and the McGuire's respond with their personal liability and their medical liability. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Now that you see that, do you recall whether you ever got a copy of that policy?
I don't. You mean the deck pages or the whole policy?
Either. Did you get a copy of the deck pages?
I have no idea.
Okay. And you have no idea whether you got a copy of the whole policy?
Yeah, don't know.
Okay. But they are representing what their insurance was and the liability there, correct? Or their liability coverage there. Okay.
That's what it appears.
Okay. And this was, looks like this was responded to based on Bill McGuire's signature on roughly the 12th page of the document. Looks like it was August 6th of 2012.
That's what it appears.
Yeah. So prior to when they would have made the settlement offers, correct?
That's what it appears.
Did you ever talk to Paul about the limits of the insurance policy and how that in, that may be important in this case?
I suspect we talked about the policy, yeah.
Okay. Prior to any settlement discussion?
Yeah.
You've already testified you didn't obtain a copy. You don't know if you've obtained, you don't know if you obtained a copy. What about Gagnon's insurance policy? Did you ever obtain a copy of that?
I don't know.
Okay. Did you issue interrogatories to Mr. Gagnon?
Sure, I did.
Let me upload this. Would they have been in Popovich's file if you...
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just going to tell you, I don't recall seeing any documents issued by you. I'm going to upload a document that appears to be interrogatories issued by McGuire's counsel in the case. I'm going to upload it right now. It's Exhibit 14. And answers to co-defendant interrogatories, and it is stamped Dolberg 00178. Do you see that document?
Yes.
Okay. And it appears that these were issued by co-defendants, in other words, the McGuires. Does that seem accurate to you?
Yes.
Okay. So would you have issued interrogatories in addition to what the McGuire's counsel issued?
That's probable.
Okay. Do you recall one way or the other today as we sit here?
No, not other than it's probable I did.
Okay. I have not seen those in discovery, so if they exist, we'd ask that they be produced. Do you ever recall talking to Paul about the policy limits of the Gagnon insurance policy?
It's a topic that frequently comes up. I don't have an independent recollection.
Okay. Would you have any memos or notes on that?
I could. I may. I don't have an independent recollection of that.
Okay. And again, that would have been in the file that... in Thomas Popovich's file. Knowledge and experience, not related to the Dolberg case, but just in your general knowledge and experience, are there any situations where a homeowner may be strictly liable for someone doing work on their property?
I'm just going to object to the hypothetical being inaccurate and incomplete. It also calls for an expert opinion. While this witness is a lawyer, he won't necessarily, I don't expect to call him as an F2 or an F3 expert in the case. That said, if you're able to answer, so we're asking
a homeowner can be strictly liable for an injury?
Right.
In general terms, not with regard to this case?
No, in general terms. I'm just asking in general terms, in your, based on your experience and knowledge of injury cases.
I mean, I think not in Paul's case, but I think I could probably think of something that maybe could lead, like, there's products, strict liability, there's hazardous mm-hmm. materials, strict liability. There's different issues that potentially, factually, if they are applicable, could apply, but not in Paul's case.
Okay. Just in general, what kind of hazardous, when you say hazardous, are you talking about hazardous chemical type cases?
There's a string of cases when you're dealing with hazardous chemicals and hazardous materials, like a bomb or something like that, things like that.
Okay. Are there any, like, hazardous actions? Could something be considered, like, some type of action be considered hazardous?
What do you mean by action? Activity?
I'm trying to give you an example, because this is, I'm just trying to understand it more than anything else. Is there an activity that you could be doing on your property? I don't know. Like, what about tearing down your home? Would that be considered? Would that be something that could be?
There'd have to be statutory authority for that, and there isn't.
Okay. So generally, for strict liability, there has to be some type of statutory authority for that.
Or common law. I mean, they have the particular fact pattern.
Okay. But this case, particularly, is simply a negligence case. Paul's case against the McGuire's was a simple negligent failure to control case, in your opinion.
That's what was pled.
Okay. Did you ever ever consider pleading any other allegations?
I don't, no, not that I recall.
Okay. Can we take about a 4-minute break?
Sure.
Let's just take a. I just want to take a quick break and review my notes, and I just want to give everybody an opportunity to kind of stretch for a second. So I'm going to go on mute for.
Okay. I'm going to run the washing.
Okay, we... just a minute. Whenever you're ready, are you ready?
Yep, ready.
Okay, let's go back on the record. Okay, thank you, everyone. Okay, just a little bit more here on... when you were talking to Paul about settlement in the general time frame of November, December 2013, did you ever suggest at that time that he seek alternative counsel or any recommendation related to that?
I think that did come up.
Do you recall what your advice to him was or what the discussion was?
I think, you know, we always talk about the risks of not settling and further down the road, what, you know, having to try the case and having to prove the case or get a motion for summary judgment, having the costs exceed the benefits and all that. And I think in my position with Paul, since he didn't give a relatively very good deposition, my thought was, we were going to have a tough time, an uphill battle, and he can always seek other counsel if he doesn't agree with me.
Okay. And you just stated that you thought Paul didn't give a very good deposition. That may not have been your exact language, but roughly that the deposition wasn't great. Can you explain, as you recall it, what about the deposition was problematic?
I mean, he even agreed with me. But he just doesn't do a very good job.
Do you mean, can you expand on that a little bit?
As a witness, as I recall, and again, it's been quite some time, as I recall, his testimony wasn't given, wasn't strong, it wasn't definite, it didn't have credible points, and some points were incredible when compared to other testimony. I mean, there was a lot of problems with his testimony.
Okay. Do you recall the circumstances that Paul described as to why he came to the McGuire's?
I think he was either going to pick up something or drop something off.
Okay.
I don't really recall. I'm thinking back now.
Okay. Do you recall whether he was asked to come over to help with the tree, to help take down the tree? Was that his purpose of his visit?
I don't recall that.
Okay. Would it matter as for liability whether it was or wasn't?
As by who? As to whose liability?
I'm sorry. To the McGuire's liability.
As to how he got there?
Whether he was invited for the purpose of assisting with the removal of the tree.
Objective form, just invited by whom?
Yeah, I mean, that's a complicated question, but...
Let me clarify if I can. Okay. Yeah. So my question was, does it matter if the McGuire's invited Paul to their residence to remove the tree on the roughly June, I believe, 2011 date?
Check to the hypothetical.
I don't think it matters.
Okay. Would it matter if they were paying Paul?
That's not the issue. The issue is Dave.
Okay. So the relationship between the McGuire's and Paul is somewhat irrelevant.
I'm just saying it's the issue really that about liability is Dave's relationship with them.
Because Dave is the one that controlled the chainsaw that injured Paul. Is that accurate?
He was the one hired to do the work.
Okay.
Or asked to do the work, however, whatever that background was.
Carolyn and William McGuire both testified that they had never used a chainsaw. Is that correct?
I think that's accurate. I'd have to refresh my memory, but that sounds right.
Do you remember discussing bankruptcy with Paul?
I don't remember that.
Do you remember that Paul filed for bankruptcy? Do you recall that?
I saw a... Maybe I didn't see one. I remember there was some sort of bankruptcy matter. I don't know the dates or when it came up.
Okay. Do you recall if you advised Paul to file for bankruptcy?
I don't advise people to file for bankruptcy.
All right, so you would not have advised Paul to file for bankruptcy?
Would not.
Okay. And then sometime after the McGuire settlement, but while the Gagnon, the claims against David Gagnon were still pending, you withdrew from the case. Is that correct?
The law firm did. Again, he hired the law firm.
Sure. I'm sorry. The Popovich firm withdrew.
Right.
And let's see. I think we're on Exhibit 14.
15,
okay. I have, I think, one more, and then... Okay. I am uploading Exhibit 15, Dilbert Mass Step Exhibit 15. It's a motion to withdraw, and it's 4 pages. And on the first page, it has the Dilbert versus Gagnon case caption and file stamped March 13, 2015. Do you have that document?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the Popovich's firm motion to withdraw as counsel for Paul Dahlberg in the Dahlberg versus Gagnon McGuire case, correct?
Yes.
And you drafted or caused this motion to be drafted and filed?
Yes.
Okay. And was it granted that same day it was filed?
I'm sure it had to be noticed up.
Okay, on the notice of motion, it looks like it was noticed for March 13, filed on March 13, but sent to the service list on March 5th. Does that seem accurate?
That's what it says.
But at any rate, you withdrew sometime in roughly March of 2015?
It appears that way. Again, I don't have an independent recollection of the date.
Okay. That's fine. And I didn't see an order actually showing the exact date of when you withdrew. Can you explain why you withdrew from the case?
The short version is just we had a difference of opinion.
Can you give me the long version, or slightly longer?
Well, we had a difference of opinion, but Paul was a bit difficult, so I just had to... There were a couple times I told him I was going to withdraw, and then he begged me not to. And so I didn't, but then ultimately it got pretty tough. He was saying some unfavorable, unflattering things, and I just decided we're not going to get anywhere. I'm going to move on.
Okay, so you the client relationship broke down, and you withdrew.
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything about Gagnon's liability or your thoughts on his liability that would have caused you to withdraw?
That was another aspect of it. Paul was looking for the stars and the moon, and I didn't see it.
And when you say Paul was looking for the stars and the moon, you mean, what do you mean by that?
He was looking for a lot of money.
Okay. And what was your opinion as to David Gagnon's liability in the case?
I didn't think much of the liability issue. I thought it was going to be a long, tough haul, given that Paul was going to be our only witness on our side, pretty much.
Okay. And there were no other witnesses other than Paul and David, is that correct?
Right.
And what about anything related to, like, the actual injury, the doctor's depositions, or anything like that?
It was the whole ball of wax. The doctors weren't supporting his claim. Dave was saying he's a liar. He tried to bribe him. There's just a lot of bad stuff, not enough good stuff.
Okay. And then at that point, you and Paul disagreed, and Paul retained alternative counsel.
Right.
Okay. Was there anything else about the case that you can recall right now that gave you pause as to the liability, either to the McGuires or David Gagnon?
Anything other than what? Pretty much everything was not good.
Okay. I mean, anything that we haven't really discussed here today. We've talked about Paul's testimony, Gagnon's testimony a little bit, the McGuire's, the premises liability. We've talked a little, you mentioned the doctor's deposition. Is that sort of the general gamut of it?
That's the whole case.
Okay. Have you ever had any other chainsaw liability cases other than this particular case?
I'm sure I have. I don't, if you're going to ask me the name or the date, I don't know. I mean, it's not a common issue, but it comes up from time to time.
Okay. Did you seek out a liability expert, a chainsaw liability expert, during the time you were representing Paul?
No.
Is there a reason for that?
That's always a possibility. It's always a consideration, but I had to consider even more whether we could even get to prove a credible case, and that was my first object, my first tier. Doesn't do any good to hire an expert if you don't have a good case.
Okay. If you were going to take the case to trial at that point, would have you hired an expert, chainsaw expert?
For this case, I don't know. I'd have to look at it again and see what we need to prove, what they're arguing. As I recall, they weren't arguing the chainsaw. They weren't arguing he didn't get hit with the chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not real sure. I'd have to think whether we need to prove what we need to prove, anything more than that.
Okay.
It was more what happened, who caused it to happen, not that it happened.
Okay. Is there a difference between an independent contractor and an employee?
In terms of what? In terms of duty or what?
Right, in terms of the supervisor's duty. So if Gagnon was, and this is a hypothetical, if Gagnon was an employee of his parents as opposed to an independent contractor, would there be a liability difference?
Objective, hypothetical, inaccurate, and incomplete.
That's a very complicated question, even though it doesn't sound like one. It depends on lots of things.
Okay. We've already talked about an independent contractor. So just in your experience and knowledge, what is a supervisor's duty as to an employee? That's actually a really terrible question. Let's strike that question. Is there a difference between the control aspect of when an let me start again. This is a complicated question, more complicated than I'm anticipating right now. Okay. We've generally established that in order for someone who hires an independent contractor to be liable for the actions of that independent contractor, they would have to control the work. In a situation, an employer-employee situation, is that control element also present when considering liability? Does the employer have to control the work of the employee in the same way?
I think there are. I'm sorry.
I just want to raise an objection to the record. I object to the form. I think that the premise of the question indicated that we've already established some legal precedent. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that he's testified to that. So, again, I'll just object to the form. But if you hear at least,
so you're asking me to compare two different theories without a fact pattern, but there's a lot to each issue, and it's hard to just say, well, if you have this, then you have that. There's a lot of different facts that apply, but now I'm forgetting what you asked initially about the employer-employee question.
So I guess my question to the point of, is an employer liable for their employees in a different way than a homeowner would be liable for an independent contractor?
I think under the law...
No, you go ahead.
I think under the law there are different elements to those actions.
There would be different elements if something was an employer-employee situation. That would be different law, different case law.
There's a different cause of action.
Okay.
The different elements potentially have to be pled, improved.
Okay.
Potentially.
But in this case, you were trying to prove, in Delbert's case against the McGuires and Gagnon, you were trying to show that the theory of the case was that Gagnon was not an employee but an independent contractor, and the McGuires had to control him in order to be liable.
Well, I mean, that's ultimately what it appeared. You follow the evidence, you follow the facts. So if it turned out it was an employee-employer-employee relationship, that's a different evaluation.
Okay. But for the most part, your evaluations of the liability were based on an independent contractor analysis.
Well, that's where it went because of the evidence.
Go on mute for just a second so you guys don't hear me shuffling papers, but I think I'm almost finished here, or maybe finished.
case of it. But, yeah, it's going to be his burden.
When did you first advise Paul that you didn't think the claims against Gagnon were going to be very strong?
Probably day one.
Before the settlement with the McGuires?
Yeah.
And did you discuss that several times prior to that McGuire settlement?
I mean, like I said, we discuss those issues every time we meet, liability issues, damages issues.
Do you recall any particular instances, like maybe after Paul's deposition, after David's deposition? Does that stick out in your mind at all?
Discussing what? The issues of liability against Gagnon?
Yes.
Now, those are probably something we talked about every visit.
So, we discussed this a little bit before, but I believe the testimony was that the McGuires testified that they purchased the chainsaw, and I believe you said yes, that was your recollection as well. Is that correct?
That sounds right. I just don't have an independent recollection at this point.
Okay. If the McGuires, let's assume that, just for the purposes of this, let's assume that the McGuires did, it was their chainsaw, they purchased it, and let Gagnon use it on their property. Would they have any duties to share the manual of that chainsaw with Gagnon or provide any other education as to the use of the chainsaw to Gagnon?
All right, so you're asking me to make a judicial decision on whether they had a duty or not?
No, I'm asking you, in your experience with these types of cases, is there any duty there for them?
All right, so a legal duty?
Right. And go ahead, George.
Yeah, I'll just object. I mean, there's any evidence that Gagnon asked for a manual, for one, but as far as in providing legal opinions, not based on the facts of this case, I'm just going to caution him not to provide what could be considered an expert opinion.
You don't want me to answer?
It's up to you. I don't know if you can, but...
Well, I don't even remember the question, frankly. You're asking me, should the McGuires have given Gagnon the manual to the chainsaw?
Yes.
If he asked for it or if they wanted to give it to him.
Are there any other warnings that they should have provided?
See, I mean, you're asking me to, and I get the question, but I'm saying you're asking me to evaluate the conduct of both parties and interpret something, and I don't know that that's my position as a witness, but should they have warned him? You know, sure, go ahead and warn him. But obviously when you take on a piece of equipment that you're skilled and experienced in operating, you should be able to operate it effectively yourself safely.
Sure, okay. Okay. But today you're not giving an opinion one way or the other whether they had a duty to provide warnings, whether they had a duty to provide the manual. Fair enough.
Yeah, legal-wise, no. I'm not giving an opinion, a legal opinion on that.
Okay. Okay. I don't think I have anything further.
I actually have just a few follow-ups. Is your understanding based on the evidence that there are only two eyewitnesses to Mr. Dolberg's accident, correct?
Correct.
That was Mr. Dolberg himself and David Gagnon.
Correct.
And did you have an understanding as to how the evidence and testimony shook out as to each gentleman's version of this, of the accident and how it occurred?
As I said before, I thought Paul's case was going to be very difficult to prove based on the testimony of everybody, the credibility issues, and the lack of evidence to support wasn't approved.
David Gagnon's testimony regarding the facts surrounding the accident differed from Paul Dolberg's version of events, correct?
Right.
Okay, and you took that into account in your evaluation and analysis of the case?
Definitely.
Did you also take into account your professional analysis of Paul Dolberg's performance as a witness at his discovery deposition?
Definitely.
And you didn't think he made a very good witness for himself, did you?
He even admits he didn't, and I don't think he made. I think that was one of the worst. That was one of my worst fears of this case. I handle lots of cases, and on the scale of weak witnesses, he's probably up at the top. And that's not I'm not putting him down. That's just a reality, and I think he even acknowledged that reality.
Okay. Not everyone is a professional.
Right. Sorry.
Right. And generally speaking, your evaluation of the case hinged in part on whether the McGuire's controlled the manner and method of the use of the chainsaw, correct?
Right.
Do you have any recollection as to what the McGuire's were doing while the work was being done?
They were inside the house, just another day to them. They weren't even, I don't think, even paying attention to what was going on outside.
Did Mr. McGuire testify that he was watching television inside the house while David was working on the tree?
We were both inside, as I recall.
Your recommendation or suggestion that Mr. Dolberg settled the case for $5,000 was based on your analysis of the entire case, including the risks and benefits of going forward and potentially losing the case at trial, correct?
Yes.
Did you have any way to predict whether the case would result in a verdict on behalf of the plaintiff in a case against the McGuire's?
Wait, I'm sorry?
Did you have any certainty as to whether Mr. Dolberg could prevail at trial on liability against the McGuire's?
I would have staked a lot that we would not have recovered in the case. And just something that didn't come up with the direct is they didn't offer to arbitrate it to me. That was something that was later decided. I talked to them about that. They did not offer that to me. So that was not an option to me.
So based on your professional judgment, you suggested that you attempt to settle the matter as opposed to taking it to trial versus the McGuire's, correct?
Right.
Okay. That's all I have.
I have no follow-up.
Thank you. Signature?
Signature?
I'll wave signature.
Okay. We'll order.
Okay. Did you need a copy, Mr. Flynn?
Yes, I'll take a regular and a mini, and the exhibits will be attached, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Oh. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.